In the example of a GLM, just one other thing to note. In the case of G equals GLN, we know that we have a nice a standard maximal compact subgroup of the adelic group, gotten by taking the standard maximal compact subgroups at each of the local places. So this is a maximal compact subgroup. I probably shouldn't use the word standard because it's not it's a formal term in the case of parabolic subgroups. I guess it's not a formal term here, but this is a maximal compact subgroup, and its local pieces satisfy our special cases of general properties of maximal compact subgroups in algebraic groups. Namely, they satisfy what in general is known as the Iwasawa decomposition. And in the case of the reals, it is that any real n by n invertible matrix is a product of an upper triangular invertible matrix and an orthogonal matrix. And this is very elementary. This is just the Gram-Schmidt. In the case of GLN, this is just the Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization process. And at a p-adic place, an equally elementary argument tells you that a p-adic invertible matrix can be written as a product of an upper triangular p-adic matrix and a p-adic integral, a general linear matrix. A similar kind of argument, except thinking of the maximal compact subgroup not as the stabilizer of a positive definite quadratic form, but rather the stabilizer of a lattice in QP to the n. That is to say, a ZP module in QP to the n of rank n. But then I guess a similar kind of, somewhat similar kind of argument, elementary argument, we'll give that to you. And so therefore, GLNA, anything in GLNA can be written as a product of something in PA times K. For p equals p0, the minimal standard parabolic subgroup, and hence for any p. We're thinking now, whenever I write down a parabolic subgroup, unless I say otherwise, it's going to be a standard parabolic subgroup relative to the fixed minimal parabolic subgroup. Okay, so now if we have a general group, the same kind of thing happens. This, of course, I can't prove at this point, but it's something we're just going to have to work with. That you can find a maximal compact subgroup K, a product of maximal compact subgroups at each of the local places of GA, such that GA equals P0A times K. You want to actually choose K in a nice way. So in fact, there are conditions you want to put on K that make it compatible with the choice of P0. But before I even, I won't write them down, but maybe I'll mention them. But before I even do that, let's just remind ourselves that a general group doesn't come with an integral structure the way GLN is. So you can't write down G's Z for a general group. What you would have to do to talk about GZ or GZP, as we've done up there, is to put an integral structure on it, or more precisely, to make it into a Z scheme. Well, it's not a canonical way to do that. There might be different kinds of Z forms of a given group which give rise to the given Q form. But one can show that if you take a given Z form and you take, at any given P, you take the corresponding GZP subgroup of GQP, that and take the product of them, that group will be the intersection of that group will be commensurable with the corresponding group that you get by taking any other Z scheme structure on G. So up to a group of finite index, you can take the groups GZP for every P, and so you insist that this have that property, that for almost all of these V's, it come from a simultaneous set of GZPs coming from an integral structure. And then at the remaining places, it's just a local question of being able to choose a maximal compact subgroup at the local place for which that is true. And in the real groups, that's the standard sort of classical Iwasawa decomposition. For p-adic groups, it's a property, a little bit deeper actually, but a property that such a group exists. It's a property of buildings that you can do that at a given p-adic place. And then just on the final note, having fixed the p0, then you want to ask that the groups kp be compatible with p0. So for example, in the case of the reals, you would ask that the Lie algebra of the real group KR be orthogonal to the Lie algebra of the group AP0 coming from the fixed P0. And there's a similar condition that you can put in terms of buildings at the p-adic places. For maximal compact subgroups? I guess I've written it in perhaps one of my papers, but I don't know if that's the best reference actually. I guess the most important part is choosing the maximal compact subgroup at a given p-adic place so that it satisfies this property. And that's a property of buildings. And the best reference for that is the article by Titz, in which he writes down all of the properties of buildings in a very nice way. It's a pretty elaborate article, but it's in the Corvallis proceedings. And so I, speaking only for myself, I guess, but I might think that most people that work with these things haven't read the long papers on buildings by Titz, but it's plenty good enough, at least it seems to me, to be familiar with this very nice summary, a 30-page summary of the properties of buildings in this article. That's what the article was intended for. We're heading towards trying to truncate the function k of x and x so that it becomes integrable over GA mod GQ. Of course, it might not be clear why that's going to give you a trace formula, and it isn't clear at this point, even if you could do that, why it would give you a trace formula. That's going to have to come later. After truncating it and being able to integrate it, then we're going to have to see why that can be a part of an explicit formula, say, for the trace of not R of F, because in general R of F isn't a trace class, but rather the restriction of R of F to the discrete spectrum, which is sort of the fundamental part of the spectrum in non-compact quotient, the part that you can't get by any other means. So if one wants such a formula, you're obviously going to, a big part of it's going to be whatever you can get by trying to get some sort of regularized integral of the function k of x and x. That's also the most explicit thing to start off with because it's rather concrete. The formula for k of x and x is just given by this concrete sum over gamma. And so one can really break it up and look at it and see in sort of reasonably elementary terms why the integral doesn't converge and what you might do to try to fix it. So to try to fix it, I've said last time that part of it is going to be those kernels that come from the induced representations from parabolic subgroups. But we need to augment them in some way. And part of that comes from this maximal compact subgroup. So as a matter of fact, the truncation that we're going to define depends on the, I mean, this would seem to be a defect, at least at first sight. It actually depends on the choice of k. There's no natural k to choose. There's no canonical k to choose. And most things in harmonic analysis, in the end, don't depend on the choice of k, even though you use a k to construct them. Well, the truncation we're going to define does, in fact, depend on k. And if we get far enough, if I go fast enough, I'll be able to say at the end how to fix it, so it doesn't depend on k. But it is going to depend initially on k. And it's going to depend on k in the following way. There's a very important function that comes into both local and global harmonic analysis. It's a continuous function for any parabolic subgroup, P, standard parabolic subgroup, from GA to this real vector space, AP, that we've attached to a parabolic subgroup. And it's defined in terms of this decomposition, this Adelic Iwasawa decomposition for any p. It's defined by setting HP. Well, for any point x in GA, we have to define it. But we know that we can write GA as p0 times k, so we therefore know that we can write GA as pa times k, and we know that that can in turn be written in terms of the Levy decomposition of p, namely mpa, npa, mpa, and k. So let's write x as a product of n, m, k, relative to this decomposition. And then let's simply define HP of X to be depend only on the M component and to be the function that we have attached to M, the homomorphism from M to AP, namely HMP of M. So the right-hand thing as a function of m is a homomorphism, but the left-hand thing is not a homomorphism because this product in the Iwasawa decomposition doesn't respect the group structure. It's just a topological product. As a matter of fact, there's even some overlap between a little bit of k and a little bit of p here. There are compact subgroups of p that can intersect k, but one checks that this function is independent of the representative M in this decomposition. So that's a surjective map. We can think of that as sort of singling out some coordinates of a point X in the group. And it's these coordinates that are responsible, largely responsible, for GA mod GQ not being compact. As a matter of fact, you can see that the smaller p is, the bigger the vector space AP is going to be. And so in the minimal parabolic subgroup P0, A0 is the largest of these vector spaces. And so that gives you the most, the largest sort of family of coordinates representing some piece of GA. And those coordinates, in fact, completely determine the non-compactness of GA mod GQ. And I mentioned last time that Burrell and Harish-Chandra constructed an approximation in general to the fundamental domain that one is familiar with in modular functions. And that approximation is given entirely in terms of the AP0 coordinates relative to this map of points in GA. Now, in order to, say, describe that fundamental domain, but also more elaborate things that we're going to have to put into our truncation, we need to know a little bit about the geometry. We actually need to deal with combinatorial and geometric questions on these vector spaces AP. So these are come from defining various cones or chambers in the spaces AP. So this may be a review for many people. It involves questions of roots and weights, some of which I think probably Fiona has been dealing with. So always here, P is always a standard parabolic subgroup. Okay, well then for any P, we've got the space, the lattice of characters here that was used to define the space AP. Now, we've also got the split component of the center, AP of MP, and that's a reductive group in its own right. And so we can take X of this and Q. And it follows almost directly from the definitions that you can, any character here, you can restrict to a character of this subgroup. So you have a mapping from here to here. And this is a homomorphism. And it's very easy to check that this is injective with finite index. So think of the case G equals GLN, and P is the whole group. So then AP is the group of scalar diagonal matrices. So remember, the characters on GLN are generated by the determinant, but the characters of the group of scalar diagonal matrices, you just take that diagonal component and embed it in GL1, and that's a character. Well, if you restrict the determinant to one of those diagonal matrices, scalar matrices, you get the nth power of the element that makes up the diagonal scalar matrix. And so you can see that the restriction map, in this case, it just corresponds to the injection that sends a given integer z to nz of z to z. And it's exactly that sort of phenomenon in general. So what this gives rise to is that this gives, AP star, remember that was built out of this lattice by tensoring it over z with r, and so because this is a finite index in this, you're going to get a canonical isomorphism, canonical linear isomorphism from this space onto X of AP Q tensor Z of R. All right, so this gives rise to this and other things, gives rise to various relations among the spaces AP as P varies. So suppose that suppose you have two groups, two standard parabolic subgroups, one contained in the other. MP1, the Levy component of the smaller group, is contained in the Levy component of the larger group. And, of course, the center, split component of the center, AP1, is contained in MP1. But MP1 contains the center of MP2, so the split component of the center of MP2 is going to be contained in AP1. The spaces AP1 and AP2 are defined in terms of these things, and so the characters on this, they can be restricted. There's a restriction map from the characters on the first to the characters on the second. So the restriction. So I'm just going to state these things there. They're very easy to prove directly from the definitions, but I won't take the time to do so. You can just look. If you're not familiar with these things, think of the examples we've done of GLN, and they'll be self-evident in the case of GLN, and that's as good a guide as any for thinking of these things. So we've got a restriction homomorphism from X of MP2, just restricting characters to X of MP1 of Q. So this turns out to be injective. So it's an injection of a free abelian, one free abelian group into another. And this gives, therefore, this gives rise to a linear injection. Of the corresponding tensor products of these things with reals. Those are the spaces AP2 star and AP1 star, simply because the mapping of lattices is an injection, and a dual surjection between the dual spaces. So AP1 to AP2. And let's write this. Let me write AP1 upper P2 in AP1 for the kernel of the latter. So just from these things, then we have an injection from AP2 star into AP1 star, and we have a projection from AP1 to AP2. We're calling the kernel of that AP1P2. But we also can use the fact that these spaces are isomorphic, canonically isomorphic, to the corresponding vector spaces attached to the characters on the split components. So we have a restriction map from X AP1Q to X AP2Q. And this is surjective. And so it gives, extends to a linear surge action between the corresponding real vector spaces, x, namely x of AP1, q. As a matter of fact, I don't really need the q in this notation. Q is meant to be characters defined over q. This is already a split torus over q, so but it doesn't matter. I'll keep the q there for consistency. Tensor R into x of a p2 q tensor R. And so we've agreed that these two spaces are canonically isomorphic to these vector spaces here. And so we therefore have a canonical surge action, linear surge action, from AP1 star, that's isomorphic to this, onto AP2 star, and therefore a corresponding linear injection from AP2 into AP1. So there are natural splittings of these exact sequences, and these are just too much fancy language. These are just vector spaces, but there's a map from here to here, and a map from here to here. I'm actually not saying that the composition of this map with this map is the identity, but what this map, because of that phenomenon up there, the fact, basically that kind of phenomenon. But what this does is it embeds this into a subspace of this, on which the restriction of this map is an isomorphism from here to here. And so it therefore allows us to identify this space with a subspace of this. So these are surjections and injections of real vector spaces, and so we can therefore canonically write AP1. AP1 has a natural subspace, AP1 P2, but there's a natural complement to it, namely the image of this under this map, which is canonically isomorphic to AP2. And similarly, in the dual spaces, we can write AP1 star as canonically as a direct sum of AP2 star with AP1 P2 star. Sorry? Oh, I just mean this to be the dual of this thing. So this is the dual direct sum attached to this direct sum. Okay, so I hope this isn't, I mean, this is a, you can see this another way, perhaps more concretely. You can see this in terms of roots and weights. So for any given parabolic subgroup P, we have the notion of the roots, phi P, of P, AP. And so what are they? They are, it's the finite subset alpha. So it's a collection, it's a finite set of rational characters on the split part of the center, AP, non-zero. They're non-zero. And they're the things that parameterize so they parameterize the decomposition so I'll write it down and then say it in a moment. They parameterize the decomposition of the Lie algebra NP of capital NP into eigenspaces under the adjoint, so it's a long sentence. I'll write it down and I'll say in words sort of what it means. Without wanting to sort of define all of these things formally, under the adjoint action add from AP into the group of linear invertible linear transformations of this Lie algebra as a vector space of AP on NP. Now I don't know whether Fiona talked about Lie algebras for general reductive groups. She did. Oh, good, she did. So then you have basically the algebra of derivations. It's just defined exactly the way it would be for a real Lie group. The algebra of derivations of the algebra of algebraic functions on the given group, and then the action of the group on itself by conjugation has a differential that can be formally just set up in the same way you do, say, if you're familiar with real Lie groups, which gives you a homomorphism from the group into the general linear group on this Lie algebra, which can be regarded as a vector space over, say, the ground field. If you take the group of points with values in that ground field. Now, so you can talk about the Lie algebra of NP. The group AP normalizes NP, and so you can restrict the adjoint representation to that group, and you therefore get a map from here into here. And so that's a map of an abelian group into a general linear group, and you can break it up into simultaneous eigenspaces under the action of this thing, and the corresponding set of characters on AP are then by definition the roots of P and AP. So in other words, this for a given alpha, this is for a given alpha in CP, add A acts on any vector X alpha in the space N alpha by mapping it by this character alpha evaluated at A times the vector X alpha. So this is A in AP. So these roots, it's a set of characters, finite set of characters on AP, and so CP is a subset of X of AP Q, which is a lattice in X of AP Q tensor R, that real vector space, which we have noted is canonically isomorphic to the real vector space AP star. So So we can identify this set, these roots, with a subset of this real vector space, AP star. Therefore we can think of them as linear functionals on AP, and as such, they act on any subspace of that. And it really just it follows right from the definitions that if H lies in AG, so that's the thing that counts for the split component of the center of G, but then regarded as up there, as a subspace of AP, then alpha H, in fact, equals 0. Basically, because the adjoint representation is trivial on the center of the group. And this is for any root. So, in fact, VP can be embedded as a subspace of a subset of APG star, the dual space of the complement. That's right. So alpha is, because of this, alpha's a character on here, so it gets embedded in here, and so therefore alpha is an element in this vector space here. So this is the dual space of AP, so I can evaluate it as anything in little AP, and because of this, can embed. So if these are things are unfamiliar, the example of GLN really they're very concrete in that case, and maybe I'll look at we can look at them a little bit later just to remind ourselves what they are, but they're sort of natural things. And just actually as an aside. There's a certain linear combination of these roots, which comes up all of the time in harmonic analysis, both local and global. It's the sum, actually, of all of the roots, but taken with respect to multiplicity. But for historical reasons, one writes that as twice rho p. So let's define twice rho p to be simply the sum over all of the roots of the dimension of the corresponding root space, might be higher than one dimensional, times the root alpha. So that's a positive integer, that's a vector, and so this is an element, this is a vector in APG star. So rho p is half the sum of all of the roots taken with respect to multiplicity. The reason this comes up is that parabolic subgroups, unlike any of the other groups we've been talking about so far, are not unimodular. The left Haar measure is not the same as the right Haar measure. And it's this thing that measures the difference between the two. So the left and right Haar measures on PA. This is on the non-unimodular group. These are related by the left Haar measure, I'll write it as DL of P, for any topological group, the left Haar measure is always absolutely continuous with respect to the right Haar measure, even if the two are not the same. So So you know the left harm measure will be a function times the right harm measure. And what is that function? It is given by this thing and the map HP that sends the map we've defined there, the map that sends PA into the vector space. So it's E to the 2-row P evaluated. So it's E to the 2-row P evaluated at HP. So this is supposed to be a little p. This is a capital P of little p. All right, that's not good notation. We'll call this pi. U, we'll call it U. HPU, the right harm measure of U for U in PA. Okay, this is a function. This is a mapping from PA into the vector space, AP. This is a linear functional on that vector space. So the exponential of that, the evaluation of those two things is the function on PA that that gives the rad and nicodem derivative of one harm measure with respect to the other. So you can try, if you're not familiar with it, try to prove it. It's not hard to prove. If you don't want to work with general groups, do it for GL2 and do it for the minimal parabolic subgroup, and you'll see why that comes in. Now, the use of the word roots, as I've been using here, is not, it is used, it's standard terminology for parabolic subgroups, but this is not a root system in the sense that Fiona probably talked about or will talk about today. So they're not a root system unless you take the minimal parabolic subgroup. So let's do that. Let's take the minimal parabolic subgroup, and might as well write phi0 for the roots of the minimal, in the sense of the minimal parabolic subgroup. Then that is, it's a set of positive roots of a root system. So a root system, a root system consists of a pair, a real vector space, and a finite subset of that vector space. And so the real vector space, so it's VR, vector space and finite subset of the space. So the space is the space AP0 G star that contains V0, space over there that contains V0. And then it's V0. That's a subset of the vector space, but it's also minus phi0. That's a finite subset of this thing. So this is a root system. And there are nice references for root systems. One, the most elaborate is chapters 4, 5, and 6 of Seminaire Bourbaki. That's fairly formidable, but perhaps the nicest is a little book by Serre, which unfortunately he assumes some things at the beginning, but which are hard to get. But then he starts talking about root systems in a completely independent way, and he does it very beautifully in about 25 pages, does everything. And so it's a little book in Springer Verlag. I went to try to find the reference. It used to be a Springer Lecture Notes, and so it exists in some form in Springer Lecture Notes. Now it's a little hardcover Springer book. So I'm sorry, but don't know what the, anyway, it's called complex semisimple Lie algebras. Okay, so it's a root system for which phi zero is a set of positive roots. So for any root system, there's several ways for choosing the positive roots. This is a canonic, this is handed to you. In fact, a set of a choice of a set of positive roots amounts to choosing a set of simple roots. And so let delta zero in phi zero be the associated base of simple roots. And so by definition, it is the unique subset of phi zero such that any beta in phi zero can be written uniquely as a non-negative integral linear combination of elements in this smaller set, delta zero. Right? So a root system consists of a finite subset of a vector space. You can add things, of course, in that. You can add two elements in that finite subset. They may or may not be in the finite subset, but they're certainly still in the vector space. And a base of simple roots is, by definition, a set which the unique set, which, of course, you have to prove exists, but that's part of the theory of these things, such that you can write any beta as a non-negative integral linear combination of elements in this subset. So non-negative integers n alpha. And then part of the theory also tells you that this subset of simple roots is a basis. It's actually a basis of the underlying vector space. So it's a basis of the vector space A, P, the basis here, the underlying vector space A, P0, G star. And I guess we could write it as A0 complement of G star. So this is sort of almost, these are just the background things that we'll have to use in discussing, well, we'll use them both in describing Eisenstein series, but especially in describing the truncation of, the general truncation of this kernel, the kernel. Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. So, so there's a notion of a reduced root system, which maybe Fiona mentioned. So in the case that the group is split, that is to say, the group A0 is actually a maximal torus sitting inside the group, then this root system is a reduced root system. If it is not split, it typically is not a reduced root system. Maybe we'll, if we have time, we'll look at it for GLN, just review what it is in the case of GLN and these various things. The simple roots delta zero then give a very sort of natural, nice classification of the standard parabolic subgroups. In general, I mean, we've seen that you can write them down easily for GLN, but in general, it's equally easy. There is an order preserving bijection. Between standard parabolic subgroups, P, and subsets, which I will write as delta 0, P, so this is between standard parabolic subgroups, and here this is subsets of delta 0. So delta 0 is just a little natural basis that's handed to you, a natural basis of this vector space, canonical finite set, and subsets of that basis are in bijection with standard parabolic subgroups in such a way that that we've agreed that we will embed AP2 in AP1. Well, in this case, we're talking about AP and A0, so such that AP as an embedded subspace, as above, of A0 is the set of elements H in A0, which are simply annihilated by every element in this subset. So you have a basis of A0, of the dual of A0, or rather the dual of A0 upper G. And then for every subset of that basis, you can simply look at the simultaneous kernel of those linear forms, and you're going to get a subspace of A0. Zero, and that's going to be the space that this is going to define. This defines the bijection. And given such a pair, let me write let delta p be a subset of a p star, be the set of restrictions to AP, okay, regarded as a subspace of A0. The set of restrictions to AP of elements in the complement. Of delta 0P in delta 0. So delta 0P annihilates AP. Look at everything in the complement. And then this is a set of simple roots, not in the sense of root systems, but in the sense of that definition over there of the roots of PA. In other words, then any beta in CP, CP now being these things up here, the linear forms on AP gotten from the Lie algebra of NP, and so any beta in CP can be written uniquely as a non-negative integral linear combination of elements in delta P for n alpha, an integer, non-negative integer. And and in fact, delta P is a basis. Follows just from this of AP G star. And so, as a matter of fact, I mean, this statement really just follows from that one over there. In fact, CP, look at the definition of the roots of G and P0, then you see that the roots of G, the roots of P0, A0, then you see that the roots of P, AP, is in fact the set of restrictions of delta 0, elements in delta 0. Some of them set non-zero elements, let's say, the set of non-zero restrictions of a T0 to AP. So the whole set of roots, in fact, is a set of restrictions, and the set of simple roots, delta P, is a set of restrictions of the complement of the set delta 0 P in delta 0. Well, there's just one other thing to say. So we get a natural family of bases for each of the spaces A, P, G. There's actually other bases as well that are equally, that come about, and then this, from the fact that you've got a root system. Since phi 0 minus phi 0 is a root system, so that's a set of elements in this vector space here. Perhaps Fiona will have talked about coroots. She talked about coroots, so with a root system, even though it's not necessarily reduced, you can still form coroots. And every one of these things has a canonical coroot in the dual of the space V, that is to say the space AP0G. So let's, in particular, take the simple coroots. So the coroots, in fact, are another root system attached to the dual space. The simple coroots attached to a base of the original root system are a corresponding base of this second root system. So delta 0 check, set of alpha check, alpha and delta 0. And so this is then a basis of A0, G, the dual of the original space, the dual of the space V up there. But it's not a dual basis. So if you're not familiar with root systems, you might first think, it's the dual basis of the dual space. It's not the dual basis at all. It's just some other basis which has sort of axiomatized properties when you evaluate an alpha check with a beta. It's not the dual basis. So that leaves you free to introduce another pair of bases, namely the corresponding pairs of dual bases. So let me write delta 0 hat. So I guess following Bourbaki, I'll write it as this pi, this unusual pi alpha in delta 0. Let this be the basis of A0G star that is dual to delta 0 check. Okay, so in other words, simply by definition, pi alpha check of beta is going to be equal to 1 if alpha equals beta, and 0, alpha not equal to beta. This would be for any pair of elements alpha beta, say, and delta 0. We'll just take one line up here to finish. Okay, so this basis, dual to the coroutes, this is called the basis, beta check. So I guess we could call, I think this is standard, these elements are called weights, and so we'll call these the simple weights. Just another basis of the original space. And then we can do the same thing. We got one more basis. We can, let's write delta 0 hat check, and let this be, we'll write these things as pi alpha check, alpha and delta 0. Let's let this be the basis of a 0g that's dual to the original one, delta 0. And we can call these the simple coweights. So our choice of a minimal parabolic subgroup gives us this vector space A0, and it also gives us four different bases, two for the vector space and two for its dual space, that are pairwise dual to each other. And it's these bases that are used to somehow to describe different aspects of the geometry of the spaces AP that will be needed to study the convergence, the analytic properties of the integral of k of x and x. So we'll do that. Start that next week, and then we'll look at Eisenstein series after that.